They will regulate a militia being necessary to the security of a free state. The right of the people to keep and bear arms shall not be infringed. Thank you so much for being a part of another edition of Bearing Arms Cam and Company. My name is Cam Edwards. It is great to have you with us. Coming up on the program today, you are going to hear from a Texas sheriff who really helped to spearhead his county's move to become a Second Amendment sanctuary. That happened just a couple of days ago. Plus, we have an amazing armed citizen story for you from Ohio. We've got a good deed of the day, and we unfortunately have another failure of our criminal justice system. Yes, the recidivism report from down in New Orleans, Louisiana. But let's start with this story out of Texas. You may have seen the headlines a couple days ago about Hood County, Texas, becoming the latest Second Amendment sanctuary in the state. I believe that there are now five counties in Texas that have adopted this Second Amendment sanctuary resolution language. I had the opportunity to speak today with the sheriff of Hood County, Texas, Roger Deeds, who talked about why he felt like this language was an important addition to the county's laws and statutes. Take a look and a listen. Sheriff, thank you so much for joining me today, sir. It's a real pleasure to talk with you.
Good to be here. Glad to talk to you.
Well, I'm glad you could join us. Hood County, Texas, becoming the latest Second Amendment sanctuary community, and I understand that that you had a lot to do with this.
Yeah, I get frustrated over the years. This is my third term, 11th year as sheriff in Hood County here, and people come to me all the time over the last few years, and back in the Obama administration, they were truly concerned. Are you going to come and take away my guns? Are the feds going to come and take away my guns? Are you going to help us? And it kind of comes and goes from time over the year, and it started up again. So the time was right to bring this to the commissioner's court, and they passed it unanimously, and we're now a Second Amendment sanctuary county.
Now, what does that mean exactly? What's the language of this this resolution that was passed there in Hood County?
Well, the language of it, it just states that we are a Second Amendment sanctuary county, and that the Hood County Commissioners declared its support of the Second Amendment up to the United States Constitution and the Texas Constitution, protecting the citizens' inalienable and individual rights to keep and bear arms. And down towards the bottom, it said, be it further resolved that the Commissioner's Court will not authorize or appropriate government funds, resources, employees, agencies, contractors, buildings, detention centers, or offices for the purpose of enforcing laws that unconstitutionally infringe on the rights of people to keep and bear arms. We'd looked at some different wording, and one of them was four or five pages long, and it had some federal cases in there, but we didn't think we really needed something that long and long-winded, so we kept it short and to the point.
Well, good for you. Yeah, you can get wrapped up in that legalese there. Let me ask you, there in the state of Texas, Beto O'Rourke is out there calling for a ban on semi-automatic rifles, as well as a compensated confiscation program. You got to turn them in exchange for some cash. Otherwise, you are a criminal. Is that an example of a law that, if it were put on the books, you would consider to be unconstitutional? From the gun control proposals that you've been hearing about, what are some of the ones that really concern you in terms of the constitutionality of those proposals?
Well, that was pretty much it. That was the last and final one that people started coming out of the woodwork again and calling me, coming to see me, and we're very, very concerned with his words of wanting to take away AR-15s and AK-47s, and then where does it stop? So that was kind of the final deal to make me feel like we needed to do this just to make a statement. And that people say, well, I'm not going to follow the law. Well, I've always followed the law. The laws of the state of Texas never varied off of anything. We're going to enforce anything that comes up, but we're also not going to put up with people trying to twist and change and anything that's going to violate any of the Constitution of the state of Texas and the United States. And to keep and bear arms, the Second Amendment, that's one of the bases for a lot of different things. So we're not going to, I guess, like I told one news reporter, the future is the future. It's not set. We don't know what's going to happen. I guess we'll see what they try to push forward as time goes on. The state legislature here in Texas meets every other year. They just finished meeting, so we don't have to worry about them trying to change anything up for another, have another year to wait. So we're just taking it one day at a time and trying to put these citizens' minds at ease that we're not going to tolerate it, and we're behind you, and we're going to protect your rights as citizens under the Constitution of the United States and the state of Texas.
As a law enforcement officer yourself, you mentioned you're in your third term, 11 years as sheriff. When you hear politicians say, well, listen, the answer to bringing down violent crime, or the answer to stopping suicide is to ban AR-15s, or to require some sort of federal gun license to register your firearms, what is your response, and what do you think these lawmakers are missing? What aren't they talking about that you think actually would help to reduce violent crime?
Well, the problems that I deal with over the years, in the last 20 years, or for sure in the last 10 years, mental health has become a big deal. And people in mental health crisis, those are the ones that end up getting out there and doing something stupid. And what has happened with these different instances around the country, we need to focus more on mental health and then keeping guns and different things away from these people so they can't hurt themselves and definitely can't hurt others. That's the problem. That poor AR-15 or pistol or whatever it was did not shoot itself. It had the help of somebody that was in that mental crisis mode or extremely upset about something. So the underlying problem is back to that mental health crisis. Mm-hmm. So that's what they worked on and focused on.
Yeah, and unfortunately, with a lot of these quote-unquote red flag proposals that we've seen introduced around the country, they sort of masquerade as a mental health bill, but really they're a gun control bill, right? If somebody's seen to be in a crisis or determined to be a danger to themselves or others, they go and, police are supposed to take the guns away, but then they leave the person alone. And very, very few of these red flag laws have any sort of mental health provisions that would require that individual to get some sort of treatment. It basically addresses any potential gun ownership, legal gun ownership. But after that, that troubled individual is sort of left to their own devices.
Correct. That is right. And they need to follow through on that. So sometimes that's what you have to do, is try to get, whether it's a pill bottle or illegal narcotics or some way that they're trying to kill themselves or a weapon, you have to separate them, that person, from whatever it is that they're trying to use. But then you need to follow through with mental health help for them.
So what is the reaction? I'm sorry, Sheriff. What has the reaction been to there locally to this Second Amendment Sanctuary Declaration? You said it passed unanimously. Have you been hearing a lot of positive comments from folks there in Hood County?
Yeah, this is Texas, and there's a lot of hunters down here, a lot of people that like to go shooting, a lot of people that are just plain scared when they watch the news at night. They want to be able to protect themselves, so it's been overwhelmingly supportive. There has been, I've got one or two emails, I guess, from some people that I'm not even sure if they lived in Hood County that were thinking I overdid it, or one person even said, well, the Constitution is there and it's protected, and so you're just trying to make a big deal out of something we already have. Well, maybe I am, but I'm just restating it to make those citizens that are scared to death know that the Commissioner's Court and the Sheriff of Hood County were here to serve and protect you and your rights.
Sheriff Roger Deeds there in Hood County, Texas. I thank you so much for your time, sir. It was a real pleasure talking with you today.
Thank you for calling.
Absolutely. I hope we can do this again soon. Now, if you hear of any Second Amendment sanctuary communities where you live, make sure you drop us a line. You can email me, cam.edwards@baronarms.com. You can tweet at me, @CamEdwards on Twitter. It is very difficult to keep track of how many of these communities there are popping up around the country. Last time I spoke with David Campbell, who's a commissioner in Effingham County, Illinois, and one of the guys who really helped launch this whole movement nationwide. This was probably close to a month ago. David told me that there are more than 500 communities across the country, counties, municipalities, that have adopted some form or fashion of Second Amendment sanctuary language. Now, some of those might be more symbolic than others, but he said he is continuing to hear from communities who are reaching out to him, council members, sheriffs, multiple times a week. Asking, okay, how did you do this? What would your advice be on us doing something like this? So this is still a growing movement. It's kind of bubbling under the surface. Not a lot of folks talking about it, but it is very much a growing movement. And I know a lot of gun control advocates say, well, this is just nothing more than hot air. It's just pure symbolism. I think that that is the case for now. But I don't think that that would be the case if, for instance, Beto's gun ban and quote-unquote buyback were ever put in place. At that point, I think you would see something very similar to what we see right now with cities and even some states and counties adopting quote-unquote sanctuary status for illegal immigration. We talked to Stephen Gutowski yesterday right here on this program about Virginia Governor Ralph Northam and the Attorney General Mark Herring turning down $500,000 or more in federal grants to fight violent crime because they did not want to certify or would not certify that law enforcement receiving these federal dollars would work with ICE when needed in terms of combating illegal immigration. The governor, the attorney general said, nope, we're not going to do it. We've seen, the governor of California declare his state to be a sanctuary state. And in essence, what they're saying is, we're not going to lift a finger to help enforce this federal law. What happens when sheriffs say that about a gun ban and a quote-unquote buyback? What happens when sheriffs say that or police chiefs say that or entire states say something similar and say, we're not going to enforce any sort of federal gun license? The federal government wants to come in and enforce those laws. Well, they're going to have to do it themselves because we're not going to help. That's the precedent that's already been set by these sanctuary communities dealing with illegal immigration. And you would simply see that same attitude and that same resolve when it comes to, federal enforcement versus local enforcement of federal gun laws. All right, let's get to today's armed citizen story. We'll get to our good deed of the day. And, I think this one, instead of a matter of time, I think we're going to go back to the recidivist report for this one, because unfortunately, we are talking about a repeat offender. And we're talking about a repeat offender who is not very old at all, 14 years old, $950,000 bail for this 14-year-old who prosecutors believe was engaged in a crime spree. Judge Mark Doherty down in New Orleans setting this a bail amount. WWL reports it came after a hearing in which a, quote, parade of New Orleans police detectives described piecing together evidence in a 24-hour crime spree that included four carjackings in which the stolen cars were used in a variety of burglaries and beatings. Detectives from four different police districts described using city crime cameras, license plate readers to zero in on the suspects as the crimes unfolded throughout the city. Juveniles, when they were arrested, were booked for 16 crimes, 15 of which, according to the judge, there was probable cause for their arrests. A third juvenile, age 16, did not appear in court this week. Now, what's amazing here is WWL reports that the high bail amounts, they say, were a, quote, dramatic departure from less than a month ago when the 14-year-old who was arrested in all these carjackings and now being held a $950,000 bail, he was in court less than a month ago, and another judge, Tammy Stewart, quote, ordered the youth released despite his arrests in two crimes involving a gun, a false imprisonment and car burglary that ended up in an armed standoff with the vehicle's owner. How about that? And apparently this is causing some controversy, the fact that the judge ordered this 14-year-old held on high bail. According to WWL, the juvenile court chief judge Candace Bates Anderson vowed to eliminate cash bail at her court as part of an ongoing reform of the juvenile justice system. Yeah. Well, the juvenile justice system, I guess, is going to have to deal with this 14-year-old being behind bars for a while. According to one official, a district attorney, Leon Cannizzaro, who says that the juvenile court has had a, quote, revolving door for juvenile offenders. He said this 14-year-old, who's now being held a $950,000 bail, has racked up 28 different charges since 2018. 28 charges. He said, quote, we find that he's involved in 28 offenses. It seems to me that someone is dropping the ball. It would appear so. And again, we're talking about a 14-year-old. Now, the juvenile justice system is supposed to be less punitive, right? And more about helping to turn an individual's life around so that they don't end up in adult prison down the road. Well, I would posit to you that if you've got a 14-year-old who's got 28 different charges against him since last year, the juvenile justice system is failing that young man. Rehabilitation doesn't seem to be working, and it's unclear what sort of services in terms of rehabilitation have even been offered this individual. But right now, this 14-year-old on a fast track to state prison instead of going to the prom here in a couple of years, be great if he could turn his life around, but I got to tell you, in the meantime, I'm glad to see that this judge is actually taking crimes like this seriously. So there you go, that 14-year-old. Today's recidivism report subject. Now on to our armed citizen story from Dayton, Ohio, where a Dollar General clerk, armed for their protection as well as the protection of the public, shooting and killing an armed robber. This is the second time today, actually, on Bearing Arms that I've mentioned a Dollar General clerk and an armed robbery, because we've got a story at Bearing Arms right now about the robbery of a, or an attempted robbery anyway, of a beauty store in Birmingham, Alabama, that was thwarted by an armed store owner. And it was earlier this year in Birmingham where you had two guys, you might remember the story, they came in to a Dollar General, they had swords, and they were going to rob the place, but one of the managers there had their legally owned firearm, and once the sword-wielding robbers saw what was going on, they all of a sudden had someplace else to be. Well, no swords involved in this story out of Dayton, Ohio, but according to WHIO, the suspect, believed to be in his middle 20s, had a gun when he entered the store and was shot by the clerk after he demanded money. There were customers shopping. Suspect walked out, collapsed outside of the front door. The identity of the person who tried to rob the joint has not yet been released. One police sergeant who spoke with WHIO says is, I don't know if the clerk followed the person or shot from behind the counter. The investigation is continuing. Detectives are working to determine whether they suspect anyone working with him. Police also say that Dollar General stores have been hit hard in the Dayton area this summer. So it was not aware of an overall uptick in violence associated with the stores or in the area of the store. The sergeant who spoke with WHIO said he was not aware of these stores' policies regarding employees being armed. From what I understand, there is a store policy. I have to confirm this, but from what I understand, there is a store policy or a company policy that says you're not supposed to have a gun. Now, in that earlier story that I mentioned out of Birmingham, Alabama, where back in March, those sword-wielding robbers came in, one of the employees who spoke to local media there said, yeah, he wasn't supposed to have his gun, but I'm glad that he did. We've been robbed 13 times since I started working here a couple of months ago. So if there, in fact, is a policy at Dollar General that says, hey, even if you're a concealed carry holder, we don't want you to have your gun in the store, I think they really need to revisit that, because it seems like these types of stores, you know, we know if you work at a 7-Eleven or a convenience store, that could be a really dangerous job, that you can be the victim of a robbery pretty easily. Kind of sounds like these dollar stores are if not becoming more of a target, certainly are a similar target to armed robbers. And there is no reason or no, in my opinion, no reason why employees of those locations should be unarmed and defenseless. If you're not going to have security there to protect that store and it's going to be an inviting target to armed robbers, yes, those employees need to be able to protect and defend themselves and others. It's pretty simple. All right, on to our good deed of the day from the great state of Kansas, where my wife was recently driving for hundreds of miles through the plains there. That is, I got to tell you, I mean, I lived in Oklahoma for 25 years. I know the Great Plains very well. Man, that's a boring, ugly drive. But at least she made it in one piece. She didn't have to stop. Her car didn't break down, which is more can be said for one family from Nebraska who recently did get stuck in Augusta, Kansas. And this poor family, Bertha Marquez, says that she and her family were on their way back home to Nebraska. They had been visiting a family in Texas. They're there in Augusta, Kansas, and all of a sudden their car won't start. So they didn't really know what to do. They're in a gas station, and they try to look for a hotel. I mean, this is Augusta, Kansas. There aren't a lot of hotels to choose from, and the hotels that were around were actually booked up. So they figured, well, we're just going to sleep in the car, and you know, we'll try to figure out what's going on with the car in the morning, and then we'll hopefully be able to get on our way. Well, Sergeant Jeremy Johnson there in Augusta, Kansas, saw what was going on, stepped in, said, no, you're not going to do that. Major Ray Marbot, who's an off-duty firefighter, was contacted by Sergeant Jeremy Johnson. He came out, gave Bertha Marquez and her family a jump start, but they were still a little concerned about making it all the way home. So he took the family over to the Augusta Fire Department and said, listen, there's a room right here. It's not meant to be a bedroom, but there's places for you to sleep, and you are more than welcome to stay here. You'll be safe and sound. Bertha Marquez says they were like heroes for us. She said, I'm calling them angels, like God, you know, because I'm Catholic and I believe that there's angels around us. Ray Marbot, the fire major, says he did not feel comfortable with that family sleeping in their car. He said they were just coming through town. They were stranded. He says, this is just what we do. He said, our whole purpose in life is to protect the citizens. Next day, found out that it was not just a bad battery. It was a bad alternator in the family's vehicle. And Ray Marbot took the family to local auto parts store. They picked up the alternator. And then Lieutenant Tim Folus actually helped install that new alternator in the car so the Marquez family could get back out on the road. Bertha Marquez says she offered the men a gift, but she says she got more than expected. She said, he hugged me and said, this is the best payment. That's all you need to pay, a hug. That's all he asked me. So I was in tears crying. Well, there you go. I mean, it sounds like there are a lot of folks there in Augusta, Kansas that were in the right place at the right time, willing and able to do the right thing, including Sergeant Jeremy Johnson with the local police department, Major Ray Marbot with the fire department, Lieutenant Tim Folus as well. Thank you all, gentlemen, for being in the right place at the right time and willing and able to do the right thing. We thank you for your good deed. And if my car ever breaks down in the future, I hope that I'm in Augusta, Kansas when it happens. I know that I will be taken care of. All right, that is going to do it for this edition of Bearing Arms, Camp and Company. I do want to thank you very much for being a part of the program, as always. Coming up on Monday, we're going to get to some of your comments. Again, you've got anything you want to talk about in terms of the stories we've been covering recently, feel free to drop me an email, cam.edwards@bearingarms.com. We so appreciate you taking a part in the program and being a part of the Cam and Company community. If you would like, you can find us as a podcast on Apple Podcasts. You can also find us as a podcast on Spotify, on Stitcher, and at townhall.com podcasts as well. Plus, you can subscribe to Town Hall Media at YouTube, and you can never miss a show. I'm still trying to do this fade out music underneath here. I'm getting a little better at it. Still not so great at ending it right when I need to, but I do hope you have a fantastic weekend. Thanks again for being a part of the program. We'll see you back here Monday with another edition of Bearing Arms, Cam and Company.